Welcome back to another episode of the After Dark Coast to Coast Killers podcast. If you are not having a great day, hopefully this dosage of murder and unsolved cases brightens it. If you haven't checked out our latest episode at all, go do that. We went back to the United States and we talked about the Redhead murders, similarities, and all of that. And if you haven't checked out any episodes, go do so. And you like this podcast? If you do, go follow us everywhere. Doesn't matter if it's on Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast. And you can listen to us anywhere in the world that allows it and allows podcasts and all that. But anyhow, today's episode is going to be a strong viewer's discretion is advised type of deal. We are going to get into blood and lots of blood, more than likely. And how this episode is going to work, we are going to first talk about, you know, what is actually fact. And then we are going to talk about a guy that may or may not be related to this case that we are going to be investigating and researching today. Today we are going to go back into Germany, specifically Hanover, Germany. And we are going to investigate the case of the Saw Killer. This is unsolved even today. It hasn't actually really came forward, as far as I know of. But it's based with an unidentified German serial killer who is supposedly responsible for murdering and dismembering at least 4 women and 2 men whose body parts were found in Hanover and the surrounding area in the 1970s. None of the victims, even probably to this day, have not been identified. And if you know the other name of this case, it is also known as the Found Corpses of Hanover. The so-called torso unit of the Hanoverian police, directed by Commissioner Gunter, investigated the murders at the time. Let's jump into the discovery. A total of 13 bodies were found in the years from 1975 to 1977, including a severed forearm at the power plant, a lower body in the city park, and a torso on a dirt road. On September 26, 1975, the first corpse was found at the hydroelectric power plant near Mashi, and torso of a young woman was found by a worker. The breast of the deceased were severed and the abdomen cleared. The body had probably been in the water for about 10 to 14 days, according to autopsy, and she was believed to be about 23 to 25 years old at the time of death. She also had a scar on her abdomen and had given birth to at least one child. The body had been tied together with a decoration card. The special commission designated corpse as torso one. It was probably cut with either a saw, either circular or banded, or a surgical instrument used to sever the torso from the woman's arms and legs. Despite having the fingerprints examined, authorities couldn't identify her. And as we continue, I'm going to point out the things that will probably be similar with every victim that we are going to talk about today, First off, the woman and female, or woman and male, I mean, isn't that important because it's not just one designated gender. In a lot of serial cases, it can be one gender and one age group and one or so body characteristic and personality characteristic. For this one, it's random. It's four men, or four women and two men. So keep that in mind. But the similarities that we will probably discuss is dismemberment, possibly a scar or scars, definitely with the abdomen part, and maybe not. These victims have, definitely the woman may have given birth or had a child. Once again, a saw will be used as well. Another thing to keep in mind with the possible similarity is that the location of a body. We typically designate a link with the other similarities in serial cases is location wise. These locations can either be highways, and that can designate a truck driver as a serial killer, or a hitchhiker, a prostitute was killed, or we can also say these bodies were found near water, in a field, in a warehouse, and every victim for the most part is designated to that one area. From there, we can also distinct how they died, like I said, the saw, and if there was any dismemberment, as stated before. In this case, the body had been tied together with a decoration cord. That is also very possible similarity to keep in mind as we go through the victims that we did talk about today. In the period from February 21st to 28th, 1976, two upper halves of a body in the leg of a woman, aged 25 years old, with a height of about 67 inches, were found. The time of death had to have occurred 2 to 3 weeks before finding the body parts. The two halves of the thorax were later discovered between parked cars at the Hanoverian area, and the other leg was found in a dumpster by students of local girls' school in Bonner Straub, and I'm hoping I said that right. Other parts were found floating in the Lenne at Rodolf von Bennigsen Ufer, or close to the Maschi. In the period from May 28th to June 11th, 1977, six body parts from a young man were found at a hydroelectric power plant, always on the weekends. The victim was estimated to be 17 to 18 years, 67 inches, and also had an Iron Cross tattooed on his upper body. On June 5th, the arm of an approximately 50-year-old man was found again at the power plant. July 10th, the lower body of a woman was discovered by a person walking along the Ellenried Forest. The victim was at least 40 years old and was around 59 to 63 inches tall. And she also had at least one child. Suffered from atherosclerosis, hopefully I did say that right, and she had an appendectomy. The lower body had been severed with a machine saw. Also, the finds from 1977 assured the coroner that the victims had suffered violence before being murdered. On December 18th, the last corpse from the series was discovered on a dirt road near Hanover. The upper body of a 52-60-year-old woman was found wrapped up in an old cotton blanket, had strangulation marks on the neck, and both her arms and legs had been cut off. The woman was between 63 to 67 inches, also had a appendectomy, and at least one child born. The reason for her death was suffocation, as the autopsy did reveal. Now, we have, once again, similarities. Most of the bodies, the majority of them, were found at the hydroelectric plant. This can mean one of the very few things. The killer probably lived in or around the area. And two, they worked at this plant. There's a really great possibility that this person had assessed, and obviously, probably in the 70s, this plant didn't have the technology that a normal hydroelectric plant would have today, but probably at the time, like currently, you would have to have some sort of security clearance or identification of sort to even work there, to even enter the building, or at least would have to have signed in to the building. So there is some sort of identification possibly. Like I said, it does say that in here, but it's possible. And not all of them were actually tied, but all of them also were dismembered by some sort. Two of the women had a child, and two of the victims were elderly, along with the rest of the victims being 60 or so inches tall. So maybe in this case, the killer could have been taller than them. So he found it easier for shorter people to be killed. Definitely people that aren't that strong. Like I said, this is just my theories on who the killer can be. This is something that is important to discuss in a case like this. Definitely when we have this much information. Some of the cases that we have done and discussed, we don't have anything. This is one of the cases with the most detailed information about the victims and the killer without revealing who the killer is. The common pattern for all the found corpses is that for most of the victims, the cause of death could not be determined. They were only dead for a short time before discovery and were cut up with a saw or surgical instrument. The whereabouts of the rest of the bodies remain unknown. The body parts were always disposed of on Saturdays in conspicuous places so that they could easily be found by passerbys. According to Chief Detective Gunter, who investigated the case, the police had no crime scene, no time of the crime, and neither of the perpetrators nor the victim's identity. At once, 11 individual body parts were assigned anonymously to the six victims, the situation complicated further. According to the Sokol Torso, the offender did not have profound anatomical knowledge, with the cuts being severed at the joints, suggesting it might be the work of a butcher. It is striking that the perpetrators had no aspirations to hide body parts of the victims, but with a certain expeditious tendency, with 2 kilometers of the city near Mashi. He dumped in not far from where the police headquarters of Hanover were located. So that's another detail. He could have been butchered due to the joints, but like I said, I don't know much about hydroelectric plants. It just seems like if they were found within it, and depending on what it looks like, there would have to have been somebody noticing, this guy does not work for us, this guy does not ship to us, deliver to us, this guy is not even new guy. Maybe even then, depending if it was a 24-hour hydroelectric plant, if it wasn't, the possibility of this guy actually getting past certain things, if it was much more open and more spaced out plant, he could have just easily sneaked in before sunrise after it closed and placed the bodies there. The main obstacle to this investigation was that the fact that none of the victims' identities were discovered. According to Gunter, the offender would otherwise have barely a chance to remain undetected. The perpetrator-victim's relationships also and still currently remain unknown. Investigations in local morgues, surveys of undertakers, and the systematic comparison of missing persons did not uncover any clues. No missing person would fit with the body parts discovered. And with this complication, as I stated before, like I said, this is just a theory that I threw out there. Despite the guy not having any, you know, knowledge of the human body, and despite the joints, this guy probably did work there. Because, as stated with the investigation, and as I stated before I read that entirely, it would have been really hard for such a person to be called out. If I walked into a hydroelectric plant, even today, and did not work there, and just pretty much stood out, and had no business being there, everyone that normally was there, or would be there daily, even managers, higher up, lower, you know, all of those type of people, they would be like, are you new? You don't work here. You need to leave. And that was the main obstacle to the investigation, is how did this person remain undetected? And that's why I'm throwing it out there. I don't think this guy was actually a butcher. Despite the joints, this guy probably did work there or had certain entrance into it, I should say, whether it was a deliverer, a post office guy, whatnot, who knows. Just keep that in mind too, I guess. One possible motive could be the intention to put the inhabitants of Hanover into panic. The criminologist Stefan Harbart suspected that this person was a highly pathological perpetrator. The police suspected that the perpetrator was on weekday employment and had to store the bodies cool in the meantime to then transport them at the weekend by car and drape them at conspicuous places where there was much traffic. And that's, that whole thing with placing them in a cooler, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying even an autopsy could be discovered. When there's something like this with high traffic and you're doing this conspicuous, really, really easy to plot activity, it just Definitely when you have a body full of, or a cooler full of body parts. There's really no time without actually dumping it, but then dumping the cooler with body parts actually makes you 100% more suspicious. I don't think that cooler theory that they brought up in the investigation makes sense. The cooler would have taken more time to do, and the perpetrator would have had an easier chance of getting caught if it was actually high traffic. The case gained popularity after being broadcasted on a show of sort with a very strong interest and cooperative participation from the audience. The fact that the murders ended abruptly in 1977 meant that the culprit probably changed his residence and was jailed at a correctional facility or has died. I don't know. It is possible that all those three things has happened, you know, when they just suddenly stopped. But the way that the police in the investigation is describing the perpetrator, in theory, wouldn't just fit of changing residence. Because if you change residence, and he still had, you know, the mindset and still wanted to kill, you would kill at that residence and you would have the same problem. Maybe he was jailed, I don't know, but the way that he is, or they described this killer in their investigation, doesn't match the theories of changing residence and even be jailed. I'm not saying he has died, because that is possible. That is extremely possible. Yet, another possible theory is sometimes with killers, they have a tendency. If you ever seen Criminal Minds, a lot of the time when media is called upon, they have an itch. The itch is really, really strong. And obviously, comparing fictional to reality is bad, but how they did it in Criminal Minds is actually very, very correct to the standard of describing pathological manipulator, liar, killer. Because they're also hiding in the shadows, but in order to bring them out, you have to call them out. And with the media, it didn't necessarily do much. It probably didn't even startle this killer. Probably did care enough to say he has intention now. People have eyes on this murder and these victims. And to be smart in such a pathological state, then the killer could have just, you know, just said, hey, I don't like this attention on me. I stop. It's really hard to tell. Like I said, police had their theories. You have yours. I have mine. Now, there are recent developments as such of in the year of 2012. More than 20 years later, in 1999, the case regained relevance when a female torso was found in Isabutel. This discovery led to the trail of former butcher's apprentice Olaf Winnart from Walking Red confessed to this murder and was also convicted of other homicides. The first was a retiree from Sicily, I should say, or however you pronounce that, who had been killed and dismembered by him. He sought out the victims, among other things, from a street on Moorwaldweg, which was then located near the dump on Altwarren Buxner Lake, however, no connection. I'm going to throw that out there. There is no connection. It doesn't seem like it. The areas are off, even just by the slightest. In autumn 2012, a similar case occurred in which Ukrainian German rapper and neo-Nazi Sach GM, road name Alexander K, called the Machi Killer, also dismembered his victim. The police took the 25-year-old violent offender, who by then had admitted in a psychiatric clinic. That guy also didn't kill people. He killed people. He just didn't kill people related to this case. He's too young for it. Because if he was 25 in 2012, he would have not been born yet in that era of the 70s. So anyhow, let's go to the second half that I had to talk about. This guy may or may not have anything to do with it, but we are going to talk about this because this also happened in Hanover, Germany. Same ideal situation, but let's just talk about Fritz Hartmann. Frederick Henrik Karl Fritz Hartmann was a German serial killer known as the Butcher of Hanover, the Vampire of Hanover, and the Wolfman, who committed a sexual assault, murder, mutilation, and dismemberment of at least 24 boys and young men between 1918 and 1924 in Hanover, Germany. He was found guilty and was sentenced to death by beheading in 1924. And like I said, I'm just throwing this out here because of how close, and I'm not saying he did it because he obviously didn't, he died. But it seems like a lot more dismemberments happened in Hanover, and not just Hanover, but anywhere over there, not just Germany, even you. Ukraine, Russia area. But he also became known as the Butcher of Hanover due to the extensive mutilation and dismemberment committed upon his victims' bodies, and by such titles as the Vampire of Hanover, the Wolfman, because of the preferred murder method of biting into or through his victim's throats. Like I said, he didn't do anything with saws, but I just wanted to throw that out there. Let's go back. Let's see what else we can find about the saw killer of Hanover really fast. It seems like there isn't anyone named as a suspect. They didn't have any suspects, and that makes sense. With this type of case, there's a lot that gives away on both sides, but the side that it does give away more of is the serial killer. I don't think that the police profiled him right. Like I said, I don't believe he was the butcher. Regardless if he knew anything about dismemberment or anything about anatomy, he more likely did work or in around, the hydroelectric plant. The cooler theory doesn't make sense as stated because it's too suspicious. If I wanted to get rid of a body in high traffic, like let's say if I dismembered a body, put in a cooler for a week, and went on Broadway, my town, because Broadway is one of the busier, if it is the busiest street, I should say, in our whole entire town, and I took a cooler, regardless of where I was on that street, I'd be noticed. People would see me park, people would see me take out a cooler, people would see me open it and dump out body parts. Like I said, as stated before, it could have been possible if this was a 24-hour hydroelectric plant and this plant was a lot more spaced out, like a nuclear power plant type of thing. It is very possible that he could have done it before, but like I said, that theory is so far-fetched because either way, there would have been some sort of record of him being there. And the record probably was he was a worker, whether through a shipment company that did ship. That's why I do agree with their theory of him delivering there or constantly going there so he would know the place in and out. But anyhow, without further ado, I really do hope you enjoyed this podcast episode. Tell me your theories, and if you want to do that, go over to our Facebook page. I haven't been promoting that in a long time because I actually did kind of forget about it. But go check out our Facebook page. It is After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. Once again, it is After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. See you next time on the next actual episode. I'm going to throw it out there. 30th, you will be hearing two trailers again for the same series, but just different ones. For Long Haul Killer series, we are probably going to kind of introduce the first episode and the first killer, which is Edward Surratt. And same with the Postmortem Files, where we introduce Bonnie and Clyde, whether it's part of their life or the autopsy of Bonnie and Clyde. Whether, just tune in, is what I'm saying. But the next actual episode doesn't, we don't come back with one until May 7th, which we will be talking about the Toronto Hospital murders. See you next time on After Dark Coast Killers podcast. I hope you enjoyed it.